and the Raiders have won it. Las Vegas is still alive. 16-14 as Carlson hits the game winner.
Burke takes the snap, fires, caught, touchdown! A touchdown back right of the end zone for Emir Smith-Marset.
Yeah, you heard it. The guy that scored that touchdown that Vic just played the highlight of, that we've all heard of before. The Fan Morning Show, where we talk about the Emir Smith-Marset, and he's the guy, and you give it to him, and you win the game. It's JD Bunkus, it's Blake Murphy. There used to be this thing for a while after the pandemic. Well, I shouldn't say after the pandemic, that was stupid. After pandemic one, this is pandemic two. The sequel, the re-pandemicing. The first time they shut down sports, we all said, I'll never complain about sports again. Whatever comes back, I'll cherish it. I'll be so grateful for anything. Yesterday was a test. Yesterday was a testity test, test, test. Here's Nick Mullins. Here's Derek Carr. Here's Kirk Cousins on a Monday night throwing less than 100 yards. And actually, Justin Fields was pretty entertaining, so maybe we'll talk a little bit more about him. But yeah, boy, oh boy, oh boy, what a night in the NFL. How you doing this morning, buddy?
I'm good. It was a test. The only thing missing from the test was we were supposed to have Raptors Magic last night. It was postponed, but that's the ultimate, like, NBA fans, hey, if you give me sports back, I will never complain about a Raptors Magic game again. Because somehow they've played against each other like 32 times in the last 3 years, it feels like.
Yeah.
And that would have been the one. So ironic that that's the one we lose, where people are like, huh, you know, maybe that is the line where that game's okay to postpone.
I was genuinely going to say it's okay to postpone it because they'll still play 38 more times.
Yeah, you're fine. You're fine. We lose the Freddie Gillespie revenge game, but that's about it.
Is he playing for the Magic now?
Yeah, he just got signed as one of these emergency call-ups that we'll talk about a little later.
I can't wait for him to basically become Kem Birch there, where he has a couple of good seasons, and then the Raptors end up trying to sign him. that connection between Masai and Wellman.
We've liked you for so long, Freddie.
Yeah, yeah.
Remember?
You know how much we've liked you. Of course we've liked you. So...
yeah, not the best of football games. I mean, weirdly entertaining football games. Mm-hmm. The Browns always have this kind of morbid curiosity around them, and the way that one ended with the, like, first of all, Mullins like leading them on not a 2 minute drill but a late comeback, and then the double Carlson kick. It was fun enough. And then there's like there's a richness to Kirk Cousins getting his second career Monday Night Football win in a game where he goes 12 of 24 for 87 yards. Like, not at all a good Kirk Cousins performance, but he gets he breaks that 1-9 record. 2-9 with a bullet now for Monday Night Cousins.
What did I say, though? That team scores early. That's what they do. The Vikings score early, they look good early, and then they Viking the rest of the way home. That is the Vikings. In some ways, they are the most predictable team in all of football. I swear, I know every Viking script now, like I've been watching that team for 20 years. So we'll get back into the football, and I have some thoughts on those games last night. I just quickly want to say, yesterday, thank you to everybody who reached out and just had some thoughts on our opening block yesterday, where we talked about COVID's impact on sports and on us and where we see this thing going. And yeah, this isn't a complaint. It's just, this isn't easy because it is very nuanced. And I don't think that most of you give a crap about what your sports hosts and sports writers have to say about COVID. I like getting direction on these things and what we think is going to happen, like the actual reporting. Because yesterday we found out that the NHL is going to suspend its games until the 26th, right? Boxing Day, they're going to come back and try to hijack the World Juniors. They're going to do that. Normally, that's the World Juniors Day. The NHL said, we're taking that day back. That's our day now. We're the big bully on the block. So, I don't know. who knows? Anybody who says they know seems like a bit of a charlatan to me. It's really tough to say how this is going to project over the next little while. To me, it doesn't really make too much sense setting a precedent like this, especially considering that it doesn't seem Omicron is going to go away at any point in any time. And now you've kind of established, hey, this is what you're going to do. You're going to shut down games. That said, back to my initial point, I don't think many of you care. And I think most of you are just trying to escape this. And I know for me anyways, one of my biggest points of frustration yesterday was people just doing their jobs, which was covering what's happening and what the updates are. And I cannot tell you how disappointing it feels when you go to sports pages and all you see is up things on how this variant is making things uncertain. Like, I don't need to hear it anymore. I honestly don't. And so I got to tell you, for me anyways, I'm going to try to limit the amount of Omicron content that is on the show. I think we all get it. I think Ontario certainly gets it. I think that we've proven that we get it. I don't think that people need to be talked down to. I don't think that people need to be explained some of these simple things anymore. I don't think that they need to be dictated to. I think that it's pretty clear after this long, we're understanding what this means living in a pandemic, the frustrations of it all, and really adding to it is media has a tendency to think that they're helping, and I sometimes think it's not. It's just you're not helping. You're actually pushing down on the box I'm trying to carry.
Yeah. So we mentioned these numbers yesterday, but right now in Canada, 90% of eligible people have had at least one shot. 87% have had at least two. Yeah. We don't have booster numbers yet because the rollout's a little slow. But sure. All that's to say, about 90% of us are doing what's being asked. So get your booster, keep your head down, be safe. And then, yeah, we'll try to talk about sports in this space because, yeah, we had that conversation yesterday. You had that point right now. And then other than that, you know, it's, hey, who's in the lineup? Who's not? When are these games? You know, as far as a sports show goes, that's all the COVID talk you probably need on your drive to work is, you know, is the game happening and who's available?
Yeah, I that's it. That's all I want to know is who's in, who's out. And quite frankly, this is just what I mean about the NHL shutdown is I just saw a lot of people celebrating it yesterday. Good job, NHL. Good job. You're doing such a great job. It's the best job by you. Okay, we'll see. Right? We'll see. I don't know why it's just so celebrated right now. Is this what you're going to do moving forward, NHL? Is this it? So you're going to have positivity rates go up and then you're going to have to shut down a bunch of games again? I don't know how you're going to operate this thing. The NBA,
we're right back to business on the NHL side with there'll be 14 games on the 27th.
Right. Okay.
So it's, it's right back to business. So if this week of cool off doesn't cool it off.
Yeah. I was going to say, I'm thrilled that the NHL has announced that the Wave 2 will end on the 26th of December. Thank you, NHL, for letting us all know that this is going to be the case. Just, I don't understand the amount of people that really want to make these congratulatory statements to some of these leagues when this has nothing really to do with their virtue. This is not the NHL being virtuous. This is not the NHL even trying to be intelligent. This is the NHL being the only league that really has to deal with the Canadian government. Like, that's what this is.
So I do think there's a bit of a missed opportunity to build. So something that I thought was interesting about when the NBA came back in a bubble was having afternoon games all the time.
Yeah.
Because there weren't fans there and... You know, obviously, like, people are at work and it hurts the ratings and stuff, but you're trying to jam a lot more games into a shorter window of time. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I looked at that schedule for the NHL on the 27th, and I know it's a Monday, but it's also a Monday that's a stat holiday, and 14 games that start 7 o'clock or later, I don't know, missed opportunity, I think, to spread that out and try to own a whole day. And, like, yeah, it's the World Juniors, but...
No, Blake, the NHL is the dumbest league in all of the leagues, and that's why it's hilarious when people go, congrats to the NHL for doing this. They're not smart. They're not doing anything smart ever. If you think NHL is doing something smart, you're wrong. They don't do smart things. That's what all I know about that league. You think I wanted to ask you this. Do you think south of the border anybody noticed that the NHL shut down? That they're going, what? I bet you so many people showed up to those games and they went, what happened? I thought this was like lacrosse. Like, you're going to shut down lacrosse? That's how that felt.
Yeah, I mean, like, Minnesota Wild fans were probably in the know and fairly upset. You're going to kill our momentum. What's going on? But yeah, it is funny. Like, so to answer that question, I just brought up the league standings. I'm like, what teams are doing the best that might be affected by this? And it is like, it's the year of the warm weather teams, where like Nashville, Vegas, and Anaheim are three of the top four teams out west, and Tampa and Carolina are leading the divisions in the east. Yeah, it's a good year to be a mid to small market warm weather team. I guess Carolina's not that warm, but
congrats to them. Congrats to all their throngs of fans that just care about those teams. Like the Carolina Pig, for example, who they wheel to the parking lots for storm surge. What an educated and great fan base they have there.
Go Pigs.
So, Pigs. So yesterday's football games, you said it. They were actually exciting, so I really don't want to crap on the excitement level of the game. The second one was horrible. The second one, I'm sorry. I don't care that the score was semi-tight throughout the game and that Fields had some moments. That was just a horrific watch. I sat there for an hour of it just trying desperately not to sink my head to my phone as I watched the Vikings. Kirk Cousins, no completion. Kirk Cousins, no completion. He went a stretch where it was essentially, I believe, the third quarter at around the six-minute mark where they picked up a first down. They didn't get another one until the fourth quarter where they were trying to put the game away with about 3 minutes left. It was really, really a pathetic performance for Kirk Cousins. They interview him after the game, and they're asking him about being in the chase and being in the hunt, and I'm just going, are you serious, man? You're the worst. You're so bad. You cannot win in primetime. And even when you win, it's because the Bears and Matt Nagy hand it to you. They handed it to you on a silver platter. You didn't throw for 100 yards. So the one thing I took away in terms of tying a thread between all these teams, though, was it just felt like deja vu all over again, man. The Vikings are the Vikings now with Kirk Cousins, right? They're a team where every once in a while they can show you a really high ceiling and trick you just a little bit into get to believing them as one of those good bubble teams that it could be dangerous. But ultimately the low floor shows up far more often than the high ceiling does. And Kirk Cousins, once again, as you mentioned, he is just not a primetime player. And eventually this is kind of one of those stats where you go, hey, I know it's technically a small sample, but it's a pretty big sample, all things considered. I don't think that this guy can play in big games. I think that he actually does choke, that he is legitimately a choker. Then you have that Bears team, where under Matt Nagy, they have just been hilariously one of the worst offenses that you can watch in all of football, season over season. This guy's supposed to be an offensive coach, and I never feel like they do anything creative. It's gone from Mitch Trubisky to Dalton to Fields feeling like he's actually being squandered in some ways. It's just awful, awful football with a defense that routinely is never really good enough, minus that one year they got Khalil Mack in the trade, that it really impacts the game enough for you to believe that they can steal enough wins. Earlier, the Browns are the Browns. And I will say that I didn't notice a lot of difference between Nick Mullins and Baker Mayfield. And that's a Nick Mullins that didn't score more than a touchdown in that game. So take it for what you will. But it just felt, even with all those injuries and all those people on the COVID list, which was unfair for Browns fans, I didn't see like a discernibly different Browns team. I just didn't. I'm sorry. I can't sit there and go, man, if they would have had Jarvis Landry, then they would have been running up the score. Nah, they just suck. They're just the Browns. The Browns are the Browns. And then, last but not least, you have the Raiders, who have had Derek Carr seemingly for 10 years, and now they feel like they've been in Vegas for 10 years, and they're just lifeless. They just have this still no identity. A guy who can pick up the odd win, it's kind of like the Vikings thing. Every once in a while, show you a bit of a high ceiling, but mostly a low floor. So my question to you is simply this. Which one of these teams are you just the most sick of? You get to press a button and you get a complete overhaul tonight. It's probably going to be all four of those teams, by the way, at some point. But you get to choose one. Who do you just want to see the overhaul? Where do you want to see it happen?
Yeah, so the most NFL thing is that after last night, three of those four teams are 7-7 now. And it's just like, yes, there are just so many bad 500 teams. The Bears, of
the
course,
Bears are eliminated.
So, yeah, and they're 4-10. And so this is, I know you joked as you passed it to me there that like the answer is probably all of them. And yeah, like I got to think Matt Nagy's hanging on by a thread here in year four as head coach there. But the one for me is the Vikings. And I think, you know, you can make a case for all of these teams. Cleveland has the position where you could most easily, I think, tweak things. But the Vikings are, they're just kind of floating, man. Like they've, this will be the fourth time in the last 6 years that they were, you know, between 7 and 8 wins. They had that really good 2017 season where they won the division and went a little deeper. But really, even like their 2019 was not that interesting. This is year 8 of Zimmer at the helm and year 4 of Kirk Cousins. Yeah. That's a lot. And like they've made the playoffs.
A decade of the Zim man. No,
they've made the playoffs 3 times, but like,
sure.
What if those seasons were sequenced different, right? Like what if the 3 playoff seasons had come at the start and then you had 5 straight seasons of basically being a 500 team? I don't know that that's any worse than, hey, you're good 1 year and you're mediocre the next. So I look at this team. I think they have some pretty interesting young talent. I think there's obviously runway left with Dalvin Cook. 26 is not quite over the hill for a running back. I think Madison and Kane are moderately interesting as skill guys. And then you obviously have a guy like Justin Jefferson, who your touchdown prop hit last night, by the way. That's an electric young receiver. And like, you know, he's got the Randy Moss stuff before the game. That's a fun guy to move forward with. And their defense isn't that bad. It's, you know, where are they defensively right now? I think somewhere. Oh, I guess they're 25th in the league. But
I was going to say the defense kind of stinks.
Yeah. But I think there are exciting enough offensive pieces here. And Kirk Cousins is, you know, we've talked about him before when he was like at the top of the analytics quarterback pile of like he's kind of he represents what the Minnesota Vikings represent. And it's that if you're worse than this level, you're in trouble. And if you're better than this level, we can have a conversation. Mm-hmm. And Kirk Cousins is kind of the gatekeeper of like, should that quarterback get replaced? Should you look for an upgrade? And I don't think Kirk Cousins is bad. But I think this is year 4 of doing the same thing in Minnesota, and it's obviously not trending upward. So I would like to see a shakeup there.
That's the one for me.
And it's like the Vikings, maybe it's that division. Maybe it's that one of the friends that I watch the most football with is a big Vikings fan. But mm-hmm. I feel like the Vikings, when things are clicking, are a really fun team and really fun fan base. So, yeah, they're a team that I'd like to see turn it around a little bit, and that probably means a coaching change and maybe a quarterback change.
I want to know who your fun Vikings fan friends are, because the ones I know are deeply sports depressed. They have not had a lot to cheer for, truly. So the best year under Zimmer that they had was the season where Case Keenum, I believe, went 11-3 as the starting quarterback of the team. And it actually preempted the Kirk Cousins era because they looked at Case Keenum and meant, well, what if we just upgrade here a little bit? What if we just get a little bit better of a guy and have this team and this coach? Boy, oh boy, oh boy, could we be a contender or what? And they went out and got the guy who can't win big games. And they thought to themselves, hey, this guy is going to win big games now. He's going to, you like that all the way to the Super Bowl. He's been horrific. I'm so tired of people who tell me Kirk Cousins is a good quarterback. Honest to God, he is such a, there is a section of NFL Twitter or NFL media that is, oh, Kirk Cousins is so underappreciated. People rip on Kirk Cousins, but that is a competent NFL quarterback. That is a good NFL. He stinks. He absolutely stinks. Good quarterbacks win big games, and this guy has been a routine career loser in big games. He did it with Washington when they had an opportunity to go to the playoffs. All they had to do was beat a lifeless Giants team. Could not do it. Could not do it in week 17. Goes to the Vikings and basically just plateaus their franchise. He stinks. Kirk Cousins stinks. That's why I like your answer, man. It's the right one. All of those teams are annoying. All of those teams that we referenced from yesterday are very much in this trapped in a cycle of mediocrity, right? Mediocrity to bad. But at least I can see a Bears fan going, we have Fields. You watched yesterday and went, this guy has something to him. That was a weird game because they scored 9 points, and we're going to get to why it shouldn't have been 10. But they scored 9 points, and yet I felt pretty good about Fields in that football game, right? I went, you know, this is a guy that when they get him a new head coach and they give him a year, there's bones here, right? Are there bones to this house? And there is bones to the Chicago Bears because they have that. There are bones with the Oakland Raiders because they really do have some pieces on their defensive line that you like. That you think that, hey, we can move forward with some of these things. There are bones with the Cleveland Browns. I actually think the Browns are one of the best teams in football. They just have Baker. And if they were getting, they're going to be the team that talks themselves into Kirk Cousins this offseason. I can't wait for it and go, oh, well, maybe Kirk is a very good quarterback. And the analytics say, and then he's going to plateau their franchise the way that he did with the Vikings. But no, you're right. I'm so sick of watching this Vikings team have Jefferson and Thielen and Conklin and have had competent defenses, overly qualified defenses. And it's just like Cousins and Zimmer. Cousins and Zimmer, Cousins and Zimmer. And Zimmer was a good coach and I believe is very smart with his blitz packages. He's been a great third down guy. But overall, when it comes to game management and game structure, they have lost something significant since not having Stefanski. And I think it's time. That's the ultimate blow-up team. I need to see something new there. If I'm a Vikings fan, there's just absolutely no way in hell I can watch another season of Kirk Cousins, more so than any of those other franchises.
So Kirk Cousins, over these 4 years with Minnesota, ninth in the league in quarterback wins. He's got 31. And he's been 16% above average based on Pro Football Reference's passer rating index. So
yeah, this
so
is what I mean. So it's like all the numbers. They know. We're going to look back in history and people are going to tell me 15 years from now, there's going to be a segment that I'm watching on NFL Network, and they're going to go, the great Kirk Cousins was so underrated. Does he have a Hall of Fame case, 16% better than all the other quarterbacks? And I'm going to pull all my hair out, and I'm
going
to have to
turn the television
off.
I'm going somewhere with this, though.
Okay.
So of the players who, the top 20 in wins over the last 4 years, so there are 20 quarterbacks who have won at least 24 games over the last 4 years. You know who's last in fourth quarter comebacks?
Yeah.
You know who's...
I can guess.
Yeah, it's Kirk Cousins. And in game-winning drives, there are a couple guys with one fewer. Jimmy Garoppolo, Mitch Trubisky, and Matt Ryan have 6, and Kirk Cousins has 7. So, obviously, if you're leading, you don't have to make those fourth quarter comebacks and game-winning drives. But, yeah, when you're talking about this guy's a good quarterback in a vacuum and like an average play, like if you're, hey, 2nd and 7 with a 7-point lead in the middle of the second quarter, Kirk Cousins is really good. It's in those higher leverage spots where he hasn't been as impressive, we'll say.
The only place Kirk Cousins is clutch is the negotiating table. That's it.
That's a pretty important spot to be clutch.
I would argue it's more important than his actual football career that Kirk Cousins has done extremely well for him. He's obviously not one of the leagues. He's played himself into a good spot where teams look at him as a above replacement quarterback. But to me, there's just more to it than your ability to rack up regular season wins when you're handing the ball off to Dalvin Cook and throwing the ball to elite wide receivers. And that's what they've had. They went from Diggs to Jefferson. Diggs, one of the more underrated receivers in the NFL when he played for the Vikings, and Thielen, who soaked up a lot of the credit, who was very, very good, and now starting to slow down a little bit. But Justin Jefferson, to me, night in, night out, is the best receiver in the NFL. The best. He's the very best one. And Kirk Cousins is just, oh, that's a good old leaving the, that's the work from home. That's the work from home. You leave the volume on, you get the Zoom call. That's a very work from home sound. I'm done with Kirk Cousins in the Vikings uniform. If I'm a Vikings fan, I'm done with Mike Zimmer. And so they're probably the reset button team. I would have argued, like, just to, for the sake of the segment, that the other team would be the Raiders. I just, they're so lifeless. But I think that actually is
coming. I think
they're
doing that anyway, right?
Yeah,
that's
it.
I think that's
right.
Going to happen because of the Gruden thing.
Organically.
Yeah. And I think the Bears probably should move off of Nagy, but, like, they got their young quarterback. They at least... And they're going to have a higher pick than the rest of these teams, right? Like, the other three teams we're talking about are going to be a middle-class pick. They're all 7-7. And, hey, at least Kirk Cousins only has a $45 million cap hit next year.
Dude, I swear to God that the Raiders or the Bears are two of the leading where Kirk Cousins could go contenders. But I could genuinely see the Wilfs going, we're going to run it back with Kirk, and we're going to run it back with Zimmer. And we feel as though these two guys and go, oh, if they make the playoffs and somehow win a round, I just think that's going to happen. I'm terrified for Vikings fans. I really am. It is just a stuck-in-the-mud franchise. All these franchises are stuck in the mud. But the Vikings are the only one where you look at it and go, no, my terror level is through the roof. And then number two, I would say, is Browns with keeping Baker, because – if they keep Baker Mayfield, they're not winning. And any Browns fan who thinks Baker is going to win is just completely delusional, to the point of you can't even talk to them. Every once in a while, I get one in my DMs or get one on Twitter, and I go, okay, that's fine. I'm not having this conversation with you. It's very plain and obvious that this guy is one of the worst starting quarterbacks in the NFL, if not the worst one. You got to move on.
Yeah, and if you're the Vikings, if you're that ownership group, the one thing you could maybe convince yourself of is, like, hey, Cousins has 1 year left on his deal after this, and obviously that's a very complicated deal to trade. Zimmer has 2 years left after this, and it's easy to get rid of a coach closer to the end of their contract. Like, maybe you run it back once more just for those reasons, but you better be looking at a quarterback succession plan in the interim. Like, you don't want to – it's one thing to do what the Steelers have done because you have Ben Roethlisberger, and he's meant so much to your franchise. It's another to not have that succession plan ready and out of fealty to 4 years of Kirk Cousins.
So we got another game tonight, and we're going to get another one of these teams. And unfortunately, it's my Seattle Seahawks, where they're just rudderless, and it's been the same thing for a bunch of years. And you're probably going to end up seeing some type of a turnover during the offseason. The only thing I could say is, I don't ever want to – I've said this many times before. I never really wanted Seattle to have to trade Russell Wilson, but the franchise is in such a dire spot that I actually don't see another choice. They don't have other assets to sell. They don't have other draft picks. They're totally capped out. And unfortunately, it does feel like a situation where you say, we're firing the general manager, we're firing the coach. If there was smart ownership, but their ownership is really absent, which is – leading me to believe that I could be in a similar spot as Vikings fans, where I go, boy, I have to be here with you in purgatory, NFL purgatory, of just the old run it back, you know, the old run it back and see the same level of mediocre football team and try to talk yourself into it being different because you get a couple of sexy wins every year. They probably trade Russ, but I did think, I'm watching that Vikings team, and I couldn't help but think, that's one group where no one talks about them with a Russ trade. And Russ with Justin Jefferson and Russ with Adam Thielen and Russ with Ty Conklin, that would be fun. And same goes for Vegas, where that's another franchise that has kicked around the idea of trying to get Russell Wilson. Believe that they were on his no trade or his trade list. And if you just look at that team as well, they've done pretty good jobs in the past building offensive lines. I think Jacobs is terrible. If you look at I don't know how he was a first round pick. He's just like no explosiveness.
He was bad even last when he gets night. And I know the Browns are a good defense, but like they're not. They haven't been a good rush defense. And Peyton Barber comes in and looks more explosive than you. It's not a great sign.
But I did look at those teams yesterday and say Browns, Raiders, Vikings. May you all be in a bidding war for the services of Russell Wilson next year. May I at least get a trade package back that is so undeniably big that it at least gives me hope for the next couple of seasons, saying, well, we still have that Vikings first-round pick for 2024, I just need that. That's all I need is a little bit of hope as a football fan. You want to take a break?
Yeah, let's take a break, and then you know, we'll do the first and only ever edition of the G List. the eye roll that JD just gave me.
I don't know who this is for. Like, I don't know who wants to know who the people are that are at the end of the Raptors bench. Yeah, I think
No, we're going to talk actual NBA stuff.
I
like needling you with the G
League.
Hey, we were just talking about the Seahawks and heading to a break. It was either make the G List thing or talk about how Jamal Adams has 4 years left on his contract. And
don't you dare.
You shouldn't even want picks back. You should just want a team to take Jamal Adams in a Russell Wilson deal for the karma and the vibes. So I chose the G List thing, but if you want to go down the Jamal Adams route, we could do that.
My only salvation with Jamal Adams, who, again, it's one of the worst things that's ever happened to me as a sports fan, is there's this one Instagram account that makes memes about him constantly, calling him Blitz Boy. And I like those memes, and every Sunday, that's my whole salvation for the Jamal Adams experience, is this one Instagram account that constantly pokes fun at him, calling him Blitz Boy, and points out his inability to cover. I gotta say, I was day one hating that. Good memeage. Let's take a break, let's come back, and let's talk about what's been most surprising to us so far this NBA season, and with our Toronto Raptors. JD Bunkus, Blake Murphy, Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Good morning. It's Fan Morning Show, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. I'm Blake Murphy. He's JD Bunkus. Ilis Porfar's off. He's out in some mountain, skiing, drinking hot chocolate with toasted marshmallows, whatever else she posted on Instagram. Looks like a good trip.
What's the difference between me and you?
I want to do the G List here, and you want to talk about Kyrie and LeBron. That's the difference between me and you. No A List today. So, Ailish didn't. This is you know, she's having too good a trip. So the first time Ailish was off, she sent in remote A List for me to do. Not so much this time. It's what you hope for when your coworkers take a little break. Is she has no idea what's going on the show.
I gotta tell you, there's no greater time for us to get a break from the A-list than actually these 2 days.
When there's nothing good in the world?
Well, no, this is actually the opposite. Is usually the A-list includes something that's a very cheery story, and I have to be the person who blackhearts it, because you guys go, oh, Fred VanVleet gave a puppy dog some money, and I go, oh, okay, and that's the A-list, and then I have to be the one that's like, what did the puppy do to deserve it, you know? And now, over the last couple of days, that would be a tough one. It would be tough to be the person who you come around the horn to on the positive story who goes, yeah, but so what? That's not a good look. I needed that reprieve. I need that little buffer.
So we're going to give you the chance to do that anyway, because the new NBA restrictions have required, or the new NBA roster rules around COVID protocols have required teams to add new players. And the Raptors have signed to hardship exemptions, 3 new guys. And those guys come out of the G League. So it's time for the first and only ever edition of the G List.
Now it's time for...
Yo, G, let me wrap you for a second, man.
The G List.
I definitely thought Vic was going to give us a G. You know, the Chappelle version, though, the trading spouses, get your in the car. No, we're not actually going to go deep on the G List guys, but I am just going to, for anyone who saw the news and is curious, here's how it works. So NBA teams are now required to sign extra players if they have players on the health and safety protocol list. The Raptors will add 3 by the time their next game comes around. Juwan Morgan, Brandon Goodwin, and Etobicoke driveway dunker Nick Stauskas. You could just ask me on Twitter if you want more information on those.
Who are those guys?
We're not going to talk about it here. But if you see those names and you see those guys on the Raptors bench, that's why. We're going to talk about bigger surprises than, hey, Nick Stauskas is still around? JD, what do you got?
I got to say... Well, I wanted to ask you, what the most surprising part of the Raptors season is. I got to say, Nick Stauskas rejoining the Toronto Raptors might be the most surprising part of the Raptors season. If you just told me, like, hey, this is in a – there's no – COVID didn't happen. You just get to look out at the season and Stauskas was signed, I would have gone, wow, things went really bad for Svi Mykhailiuk. You know, like, this is a really tough Svi Mykhailiuk season. But, yeah, so I've kind of reached a point in the NBA season where I look at it and say we're now at a real crossroad moment for the league. Like, you're doing the G list because the NBA is proceeding in a way that I sort of think actually makes sense. People are complaining about maybe spending money and going to these games and having to watch a G League roster like the Santa Cruz Warriors, and that one stings because that's the premier franchise in the NBA right now, right? You pay big money to go see Steph Curry, you pay big money to see that Warriors traveling show, but the rest of the NBA's regular season has already been very diminished by the players, right? With the rest and recovery era has brought on a lot of I'm not supposed to care about the regular season. And not to this degree where I'm going to see, sorry, say the first two names of those guys again.
Juwan Morgan and Brandon Goodwin.
Not the non-stuff. Yeah. I don't want to watch those guys play. But I also do feel like if you can sort of power through this and you can get through it, that I'm not going to be as upset about a few games where you see a couple of extra G League level players as long as it doesn't result in a stoppage and having to watch NBA basketball into August, right? I just am. It's preserve the playoffs for me. Get through this to me as long as you can. So what I wanted to just simply go through with you here is at this checkpoint, at this what is it? That's what it's called in a video game, right? When you get to the checkpoint?
Yeah, save point, whatever.
Save point, checkpoint, whatever. This kind of feels like an NBA save point, an NBA checkpoint. So I wanted to ask you kind of with this Raptors team and then pivot off of it and do the other like stuff with the NBA. You and I both had a very, very good feel for this group this season. And that wasn't exactly like, wow, what credit you guys get. You thought the Raptors are going to be the good, bad team. They're mediocre. They're, as you pointed out yesterday, that they're the epitome of mediocrity. They're a team that when we looked out at the season, we said, hey, they don't have any bigs. That's going to be an issue. Turns out it is. Turns out not having big men in a league of big people was an issue. Turns out that a team that doesn't have a lot of depth when they deal with injuries to starters doesn't have a lot of options to go to that give you wins above replacement. The Raptors players we're familiar with have looked very much like the Raptors players we're familiar with. And yeah, they're kind of sitting in the standings right around where we expected them to be. So if I ask you that question at this NBA save point, December 21st, right as we're rounding up to those Christmas Day games, which always does feel like a real monumental moment in the season, what is the most surprising thing of the Raptors season to you so far? What is the most unexpected thing this year in a season like what was expected?
So, yeah, the big picture stuff, nothing stands out, right? Like, they're forcing a ton of turnovers. Their defense is decent. Their offense is good in transition and shaky in the half court, and they're very average. Mm-hmm. You know, in the team profile, the one thing I would say is a moderate surprise, and this is more a philosophical shift than anything, is they're the league's best offensive rebounding team, which has not historically been something that the Raptors prioritize or do particularly well. The last time they were top five in that area was 2015-2016, so this has typically not been a Nick Nurse thing, but they have the bodies for it now. But, you know, there's not really any way around. I think the only real answer is how much further along Scottie Barnes is as a scorer than we expected. So Barnes came into this year, and obviously there was a lot of room for optimism about him as a defender and as a transition player and as a playmaker. But for him to be averaging 15.6 points a game on 49% shooting, 36% on threes, getting to the line over three times a game. And yeah, like there's some of those buckets are easy. Some of those are transition leakouts and offensive rebounds and stuff like that. But the versatility...
So are they for everybody in the NBA, though.
Exactly.
So
the versatility with which he's scoring... Like, only 29% of his points have or of his field goal attempts have come at the rim. Like, this isn't a guy who's just dunking. So the versatility in his scoring package already is what stood out to me. And you know, the samples are small-ish in terms of the shooting. Like, he's shooting 54% on long twos. that's not going to hold up. But to me, that indicates potential for the catch and shoot stuff to be there. And he's shooting 35.6% on threes, and his free throw shooting is better than we expected at 73%. So there are all those indicators that maybe he's going to be a better shooter than we expected. But for me, it's all the off the dribble stuff that stands out the most and is most surprising, because this is a guy who I don't have the numbers in front of me, but I used him at another point. I think he took 17 shots last year in that kind of 3 to 10 foot floater range. And he's now like, that's the biggest part of his offensive package is that kind of, I can't quite get to the rim and I have to finish around length or be creative in the post or do these up and unders or push shots and stuff. And that's an advanced skill set. That's a veteran skill set. And that's a really difficult place to score from. Now, shooting 48% on those shots is not remarkably efficient, but the fact that he has that comfort level with them, the fact that he has a number of different ways to score in that range, that to me is the near term ceiling raiser for him. Like, he might have got there eventually, but him showing all of that offensive feel and scoring touch and just kind of the craft and creativity in the attempts, even if he's missing some of them, that's so far beyond what we saw at Florida State last year and what we expected for this year. That's been the biggest bright spot. It's been the biggest surprise. I think it's the biggest element of the Raptors season so far that makes you, you know, maybe rethink the timeline they're on or that Scottie Barnes is on.
So the offensive rebounding thing is fascinating to me because I had no idea about those numbers, but it certainly does check out with the eye test, where the Raptors do feel like a very, very active team night in, night out around the basket. And they've had some injuries to some guys that are good at that. But one thing I do like about Precious, where he plays as an offensive rebounder. Scottie Barnes, if we're going to talk about another thing that he has added to that, another guy with incredible, that second leap ability, where if Scottie Barnes misses around the basket, I wonder how much of this is also a byproduct of like guys like Precious sucking around the rim and the Raptors going like, oh, put back, you know, Boucher not being strong around the basket, the Raptors missing around there and still having a bunch of guys that are like, how much of this is philosophical nurse versus how much of this is byproduct of bad rim finishers all crashing the net, like a bunch of Zach Hyman's being like, we got to bash it in.
So I think there might be something to that. It's a little much to look up on the fly, but their top offensive rebounders are Kem Birch, who's just a good offensive rebounder, Justin Champagne, who has a real nose for it. But then, yes, Boucher, Achiuwa, and Barnes, who are all like, you can, if you're a Raptor fan and you've watched these games, you could definitely think of instances where those guys tip in their own rebound sometimes on like a third try.
Yeah, like twice, like third try. Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
Like this feels very much Russell Westbrook stat. Like this is the Russell Westbrook stat of rebounds where you go, okay, but how many of these are legit rebounds?
Yeah. We're not allowed to joke about Russell Westbrook though, after the Fred thing the other night.
So, oh God. If anything, that only hardens me to joke more about these things and just let the dumbos be dumb. So I think the answer is obviously correct with Barnes. He's clearly the most surprising thing about the season. I will say that the mid-range was something that was put on my radar very early after he was drafted, because Coach David Thorpe, who watched him a ton at Florida State and who spent a lot of time around him, had told us, like when I was doing the show with Ben, who's on later today, by the way, 8 o'clock. Ben's going to do Text Line Tuesday with us. So if you've got texts, fire them away, 590-590. If you've got tweets or DMs, at JD Bunkus, at Blake Murphy ODC, fire away. Anything you want to do today, 8 o'clock hour, whatever you want. But Coach Thorpe had put on our radar that he was way more advanced there with his shooting touch in the paint than people had any idea. So when he first came in and he started doing those things, I went, okay, the floater, Blake, that you referenced is the one for me where I go, that's the advanced one. There are some of these shots, like the fadeaways he hits over Kevin Durant, that I go, man, that's an extreme amount of confidence. But it brings me to sort of the way that this thing happened. Man, I wonder if we end up doing this sliding doors at some point and go, the best thing that ever happened to the Raptors was having the Siakam injury out of the gates, was having him not available to the team right at the beginning of the season. you just think about what Scotty Barnes looks like if Siakam comes in healthy with the mindset that he was in during the offseason. Do you get the sense that Siakam, from your reporting or your inside knowledge or anything along those lines, has shifted at least a little bit his process or his belief as to where he fits in this team from the offseason to now? Because if I was going to do most surprising stories, I think Scotty Barnes is very clearly one. None of us saw this kind of advanced play from him. We didn't think that he would be this important to the Raptors this early. But I would say that secondarily, that does sort of fit with how little Siakam has felt like, quote-unquote, the man after an offseason of talking about being the man.
Yeah, I think, you know, there are a couple things there. And I think part of it is Fred just more naturally assuming some of that, the man. And, like, Fred is the more natural, like, leader in terms of non-basketball stuff of the two. And kind of, you know, he's the point guard. He has the ball in his hands more. So it flows through him a little that way. I don't know that Siakam had, like, I think he's probably still pretty focused on getting back to where he needs to be. I do know in the offseason he really likes Scotty Barnes. Like they think they can play together. They think their energy can feed off of each other. The early returns statistically show them. I did a pregame hit the other night. It's all trending in the right direction. Like, they are the Siakam and Barnes are the biggest assist combination on the Raptors that doesn't involve Fred VanVleet back and forth. And Scotty Barnes's numbers, like, we talk about usage and stuff like that, and the concerns, obviously, hey, he'll get fewer touches when Siakam's on the floor with him. It hasn't really borne out that way, where Barnes's usage rate actually drops the most when he's running those, like, bench units without Fred and Pascal. I think just because Fred and Pascal have, like, a nose for anticipating when Barnes has advantages or how to get him in advantageous situations. So this is something where there's a little bit of reporting fidelity lost and, like, not being in the locker rooms right now and stuff. Like, yeah, you don't have these conversations as much as we did maybe a couple years ago. My guess would be Siakam's focus pretty internally still right now about getting back to where he is. If anything, I think it's more of a front office thing of, like, hey, what's the timeline Scotty Barnes is ready to contribute on? And, yep, you know, we teed up this season as one of the big things you got to figure out is, can Pascal, Fred, OG, and Scotty all operate on the same timeline? Or is that 4 or 5 year divide, you know, too much? So that's where the question is, I think.
So I actually think that those two things tie into each other, where you go, oh, Siakam viewed Scotty Barnes as a guy he could play with, a guy that he would fit well with, blah, 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 blah. Yeah, probably because in part, he never saw Scotty Barnes as an immediate threat to taking a significant chunk of the offense away from him. And of course, Scotty makes more sense as a higher usage guy when he's with Fred and Siakam, and they're drawing a little bit more of attention versus a bench unit where he has to be the primary guy. And it's not even just like he's on a bench unit. He's on a bench unit with mostly G League guys, right? They're asking a 20-year-old kid to say, hey, carry Svi and carry Delano Banton and center of choice, whoever that is tonight, right? It's Chris Boucher. That's not a very good spot to be in. Who's helping Scotty in those lineups, right? Who's even just the one guy he can play off of? There is nobody. So I'm not surprised by those numbers. What I will say with Siakam is we sort of have left this story, and I continue to I feel like I'm one of the only people that continues to hammer this outside of probably Raptors fans. But I'm sorry, you just can't get away with what happened this offseason versus what it's materialized into. Siakam's taking less field goal attempts this year than he was last year. And I know we have usage rate stats, but his field goal attempts have now dropped from that 2019-2020 season where we really thought Siakam was all-star level Siakam, the guy that got that contract. They dropped the following year, and they've dropped again this season. He's down to less than 16 shots a game. And I'm sorry, that doesn't really make sense to me on a team that has been missing OG Anunoby, does not have offensive creators outside of Gary Trent and Fred VanVleet. But the unexpected thing for him, I think, was Scotty Barnes taking some of these touches. This is now another year where Siakam is shooting 30% from three. So that's like, hasn't shot over that since 2019-2020. The shooting is just not, I think, where we sort of expected it to develop to when we were watching him against the Boston Celtics early in 2019-20 when He had that one game where I feel like he hit 100 threes all off the dribble right in Jaylen Brown's face. There's just been a plateauing with him where some nights I look at him and go, I love the new mid-range game. He feels like above the key is a real nice spot for him to operate from now, which I feel a lot more confident in him doing. Sometimes he's a bit more aggressive going to the basket, and I like that confidence of him working in the paint and showing off his post moves. But if I'm being truthful, for the most part, I don't see where he's fitting in. He fits in less to me than I expected him to. And I do believe that that is a big byproduct of them starting this year without him, coming in, having OG looking for his own offense, looking to take his own step, and then the emergence of Scottie Barnes as a guy that you have to give field goal attempts to. And now Siakam has kind of become one of the guys when he was supposed to be the guy.
Yeah, I don't have as much problem with the volume coming down. For me, it's that the volume has come down while the efficiency's also dropped and the assist rate has also dropped.
Yes.
So, like, you could tell me, hey, the field goal attempts are down, but he's playmaking more and he's being more efficient on those shots. So, like, he's getting his 20 quicker. He doesn't need the ball as much, or he's becoming more of a playmaker. But the assist percentage is down because of the three-point shot and because he's not really getting he's really not getting a lot of shots at the rim, which is the biggest concern in his profile for me.
Yep.
The true shooting percentage is down too. And you'd hope, you know, this was the thing on his way up is like, hey, as usage climbs that high, you're going to be less efficient. Well, as you scale it back and find your spots, you'd hope that comes up. Having said all that, it's 17 games into his return. Like, I think we can be patient with this, obviously.
Yeah, but
I know,
also
I know
last
you
year
don't
too,
have to,
man. It's last year,
I know,
too.
But
like, Siakam doesn't get a just like, oh, well, last year the the whole
I know, and now he's in COVID protocols
is,
again.
Right. I'm just
and
it's
so
a lot of games.
Yeah.
It's a lot more games than I think this year and the 17 and the working back from injury. He has looked like this version of Siakam for a long time. And I'm just saying that it's not even so much the field goal attempts being down. It's those things that you just referenced with the efficiency, the assist rates, the shooting, all that stuff. But also just it being this team. This team where, I'm sorry, but when I watch Siakam shoot those mid-range shots or get into the post and show off his footwork, I go, I'd rather see you do that than Gary Trent take, you know, an off-the-dribble long two. So maybe we get a little bit of an uptick there. It's just it's an odd team for him to be now taking less of a role in the offense. And I think 17 games in, we're not seeing great Siakam games unless they're playing the Sacramento Kings in a blowout. And that to me is a bit of a red flag here. And it is surprising to me. It is surprising that he has not been more assertive this season. It's not surprising to me that we're late for break. So let's do that right now and talk to another criminal offender of this. Jeff Merrick, that's next on the Fan Morning Show with Blake Murphy and JD Bunkus, Sports 590 The Fan.